Sliwa.
Two young people decided to form their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets. When you see them, you get a nice, secure feeling in your heart.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Sliwa from WAPC Radio.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New York.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa. What happened today, why, and what's next? Live, local, on it, 77 WABC.
She's just like you and me, but she's homeless. She's homeless. As she stands there singing for money, la la.
It is your drive home at 5. And the hawk continues to talk out there. Yeah, it's cold. It's going to be cold right through the Christmas holiday. And it has been the coldest December in quite some time. I know, with those of you who believe in climate change and global warming, remember last year this time it was like 70 degrees outside. You were running around with your guinea tea. Your wife beat her shirt on. And you were saying, hey, this is great. Who needs to go south for the winter? Well, Ivanka Trump was going south, right, with a whole bunch of others. She caught a little grief on that JetBlue flight. You heard Ken Duffy refer to that in his report. I'm sure we'll be able to flesh out the details, talk about it on Curtis and Kubi tomorrow from 12 to 3. But I first want to pay a quick tribute to a guy I was listening to, I think it was on Monday and Tuesday night, substituting for Mark Levin.
Isn't it Curtis Sliwa? The best WABC ever has to offer is Curtis Sliwa.
Oh, that was great. Great shout-out from Billy Cunningham, who actually coined the term a great American. You know, that's synonymous with Sean Hannity, but he really lifted it from Billy Cunningham, the natty boy from Cincinnati. That was a great substitute. Lou Pate, who we just heard from Michael Savage. You know, he used to be like you, Coscarelli. That's right. He used to be my phone screener late at night here at WABC. And let's just say the jury's still out as to whether he was a good phone screener slash producer slash talk show host. You, Coscarelli, you're substituting for Justin B. Love, who's back in Alabama where he belongs. But anyway, let's continue on because the subject matter, bar none, you cannot escape it, is the growing, just off-the-hook, homeless and emotionally disturbed person problem here in New York City. If you go to the Curtis and Kubi website I posted this morning, just a simple ride on the B train from uptown, there was a smelly, emotionally disturbed person on the train just towards the end of rush hour, about 9:30. People were cleaning and clearing out of that train as fast as their schnoz would get them. And you had a feel for this person because you can tell they had a series of obsessive compulsive disorders, scratching themselves, and you can see they were in pain all over their body, and then taking everything out of their pocket and putting it back in, out of their pocket, putting it back in. And you say to yourself, hey, where was that vaunted program that Comrade Bill de Blasio, your mayor, not mine, because I didn't vote for him the last time around. Where was that vaunted program that he was talking about, you know, that homeless outreach worker program with the guys and gals dressed all in orange with the little orange beanies? Nowhere. Then I went topside, right in the shadow of what they call the walkway of the world, Herald Square by Macy's, you know, packed with tourists and shoppers. And there were two guys copping a squat right there out in the street. Right there. It didn't matter. People could be stepping over their body. They had their blanket on, their little panky, as if all of a sudden, you know, they had a mattress out there in the middle of the street. Cops doing nothing. Not my business. The de Blasio administration. They're not letting the cops remove them or take them for a psychiatric evaluation or any of the things that were very typical during the 8 years of Giuliani, the 8 years of Bloomberg, and then the four more that he bribed his way into after claiming he was Mr. Term Limits. But would you believe, with this exploding problem in which the city administration doesn't have a handle on it. Finally, it was de Blasio last week who had to acknowledge it's his problem. 60,000 people in the shelters alone, an additional 5,000 people that we think are out in the streets, on the gratings, in the parks, on the park benches, and in the subways. And I think the number is even more. That the city actually introduced today findings that they said support the results of their program to put street homeless in supporting housing. That's right. Propaganda at taxpayers' expense. First, let's go to the author of this, Steve Banks, who's in charge of homeless services for the de Blasio administration, as he talks about how grueling an effort it has been.
We're focused on an individual case-by-case approach. That's what's been missing for many years.
Oh, that's what's been missing for many years. It seemed that Rudy Giuliani and the Bloomberg administration, Stephen Banks, had a much better grip on this. In fact, back then, he was an adversary. He was actually suing the city any time, under any circumstance, that either the Giuliani administration or the Bloomberg administration tried to get some of the homeless and under the cover of darkness, shove them into a no-tell motel Holiday Inn Express, which was against the law, but under the provision that it was an emergency service. You know, like oftentimes happens, there's a fire, and then the American Red Cross will tend to the needy, the homeless, and they'll find housing for them in a nearby no-tell motel Holiday Inn Express. That's an understood emergency housing situation, not housing homeless people that should have other remedies. So then Stephen Banks, the commissioner, talks about how long it takes to transition a person from the streets or the subways into some form of permanent housing.
On average, it takes 4.5 to 5 months to bring people off the streets. And that's why we've doubled the outreach workers that are out there every day.
Why is that? It takes 4.5 to 5 months to get people off the streets. They've doubled the number of outreach workers. I think if there's one thing that I'm good at, I may not be the funniest on the air. I may not be the brightest. I may not be the most erudite. I am certainly not the most pretentious. That goes to Ron Kuby. But one thing is I got the street smarts. I've been busting my shoes out there in the streets and subways, and my eyes don't lie. I have not seen these homeless outreach workers. I don't know what he's talking about. And in fact, if you look at today's hometown newspaper, the Daily News, the front page headline, Insanity. Vagrant grabs a cop's gun at the Port Authority bus depot. It was earlier yesterday morning at about 9:30, and they were rousting him because he was blocking one of the egresses because of all the passengers getting off of their buses in New Jersey and wanting to pour into 8th Avenue. He objected. He tried to fight the cops off, attempted to grab one of the cops' guns. A struggle ensued, and all of a sudden there was chaos in the Port Authority bus terminal. But that is only one of five incidences that have occurred with the emotionally disturbed and the homeless of late. In fact, the police commissioner, James O'Neill, you know, the guy who replaced Bill Bratton, although in this case, O'Neill is a real Maytag of the mayor. He just is a puppet to the puppeteer, said officers arrested the homeless man accused of throwing a hot coffee on a Muslim woman and calling her a terrorist. Now, he says the cops thought he was mentally ill, but that turned out to be wrong. Wrong? Are you a shrink? Are you a psychotherapist, O'Neill? I thought you're the police commissioner. A guy walks up to a Muslim woman. He's a homeless person. He's babbling to himself. He is under some kind of psychotic duress. He throws a hot cup of coffee in her face. Everyone in the nearby area says the guy is out of his mind. He's been here before. But you come to the conclusion that he's sane and sober. Quote, he's in one of the shelters, but he has no prior psychiatric history. Unquote. Let me tell you something. O'Neill, police commissioner. If you had to live out in the streets of this city in this kind of cold where the hawk is talking and it's below zero freezing, or you had to live in the subway endlessly, day and night, with the grind of the steel, of the wheels on the steel tracks, right, the iron tracks, that would drive you Mushuga Ubats crazy. So he has no history of psychiatric disorders. Suddenly he's not crazy? So you put him back into the shelter system? What, was he granted bail? You wouldn't even tell us what was the outcome of his preliminary criminal justice hearing. And then as of December 1st, O'Neill is bragging that the cops made contact with 2,000 people. And when temperatures dip below 32 degrees, of those, a paltry 146 voluntarily went to the shelters and 106 were voluntarily hospitalized. That left the mass majority in the subways and the streets. Look. When you run across a person who is into psychobabble, that's what I call it, they're talking to inanimate objects. They're in extreme duress. They're a threat to themselves. They're a threat to the homeless people that they're sharing space with. And most importantly, they're a threat to innocent people, people who work here, people who live here, tourists. They've shoved them into tracks of oncoming trains. And you are not going to bring them for a psychiatric evaluation. And by the way, the state doesn't get off the hook because Andrew Evil Eyes Cuomo, King Cuomo II, has more than enough space at Creedmoor and Kirby Psychiatric. The one Kirby is on Randall's Island. The one Creedmoor is on the way to Long Island past the Grand Central Parkway. These people need a place to receive warmth, food, care, medicine. And hopefully we as a society, a civilized society, can help them get back on track. But how does that happen if the mayor won't talk to the governor and the governor won't talk to the mayor?
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
Guardian Angel found a Curtis Sliwa.
Really trying to help our cause.
WABCradio.com.
It's the little Saint Nick. It's the little Saint Nick.
525. Spokesperson for the Trump administration appointed the House Consigliere, Kellyanne Conway, New Jersey girl, announced that apparently the Beach Boys might be providing top shelf five-star entertainment at the Trump inauguration on January 20th. Mike Love, the band's leader, said, yeah, we're friends with Trump. If asked, we'll be there. On the line to discuss what has been a blacklist against others who would even consider that suggestion is Paul Molchine, columnist for the New York Star Ledger. Thanks for coming on board the Drive at 5 again, Paul.
Glad to be on.
Okay, so Mike Love of the Beach Boys has said, hey, we're down for this. Just invite us. We'll be there. Yet we saw that with first with Garth Brooks. He was leaning in that direction, and all of a sudden pressure. No more Garth Brooks. Then there was Bocelli, who had been performing at the New Jersey Arts Center, and he was suggesting that he would be more than amenable. Then all of a sudden, it was Ixnay. What do you think the Beach Boys are going to do here, Paul?
Well, you know, I was thinking of that even before I heard they were going to be in the running. Why is he inviting all these foreigners? I mean, Bocelli, right? He's not an American. He's Italian. Celine Dion, Canadian, right? Where's the good old all-American act, and what could be more all-American than the Beach Boys? Now, Mike Love is a known right-winger. The only problem I can see is I'm a Beach Boys aficionado.
Mm.
He owns the Beach Boys name, but he really is like the Beach Boys touring band is like him and, you know, nine karaoke dudes, you know? They do put the whole thing together with Brian Wilson and Al Jardine and the whole remaining surviving Beach Boys. That's a fairly tough thing to put together. So if it's just Mike Love, you're going to hear like Little Deuce Coupe. I think that was the only song he kind of sung all the good songs. They're not Mike Love, you know. But I think that would be a great all-American band for the inaugural.
You know what I would do, because it's obvious they're struggling here, Paul. They're being turned down over and over again. I think that these groups and these people are being blacklisted if they would even entertain the idea. Is Trump should just say, unlike what Hillary did the night before the election, in which she had Springsteen, she had Bon Jovi, she had Barack, Michelle Obama, she had every trendoid, freakazoid out there in Philadelphia, we're just going to have a celebration without all the pomp and ceremony and just get down to the business of doing what I said I would get accomplished in the first 100 days.
Yeah, I was at that Springsteen thing, and it was funny. Here he is singing about the working man, and the working man all voted for Trump, you know? So that was quite a hilarious... I don't think Springsteen himself understood that everybody who actually works for a living voted for Trump, you know? But that was a fairly horrible thing to have to endure. So I would think the Beach Boys, you know, they're like a first-rate rock and roll band. And, you know, Bruce is the very first rank of the second-rate rock and roll bands. You know, he's not really a 60s guy. You know, and Trump always plays the Rolling Stones. It's the oddest thing at his appearances. I saw him in Hershey last week, Hershey, PA. He plays... Let's Spend the Night Together, right, which is a little inappropriate given his reputation. I have heard honky-tonk women being played right before he comes on, you know, again, I mean, that's the one where it sure sounds like he said, I laid a gin-soaked barroom cream. They had a claim in the 60s. Mick was saying something other than laid, you know. And then every time when he wraps up a rally, he wraps up with, you can't always get what you want, which I just think is hilarious for a politician to get up there and tell you all the stuff you're going to get and then say you can't always get what you
want. Isn't that so appropriate for Shamu El Jefe Chris Christie, who couldn't get what he wanted, even though the Democratic honchos and bosses from Norcross to Sweeney to the Speaker of the Assembly were aligned, the stars were aligned for him to get the right to write his book, his memoirs, and his last year in office. And I see, boy, he has been doing a Trump. He has been in a Twitter war ever since, correct?
Well, did you hear the latest news? The latest news was it's a big misunderstanding. He just really wanted to write a cookbook.
Well, that one would sell because he would say,
I would buy that book.
Exactly. He must be making some really good Parmesan there because look at him. He put on pounds even after the lap band surgery.
My Sicilian Mother's Recipe book by Chris Christie.
That would sell.
You know? I want the royalties there, Chris, if you take that one. But no, he's had a rough year. You know, first he sold his soul to Donald Trump, and Donald Trump asked for his money back. You know, so it's been just a bad year for Chris. And tomorrow, the Chris Christie Bridgegate potential trial is back in the news. That Bill Brennan, the ex-fireman turned law school graduate, is hearing tomorrow from the court whether they'll consider his request for a special prosecutor. In all likelihood, they won't, but it's going to be tough to sweep this one under the rug because Mike Kelly, the excellent Bergen Record columnist, had a very good piece the other day in which he interviewed the former prosecutor before this one in Bergen County. That guy said when he learned about the Bridgegate lane closures, he was ready to go after Christie for the same charge Bill Brennan got to stick in court, official misconduct. But he got a call from the attorney general, who of course was appointed by Christie, telling him to lay off. And then he was later fired and replaced, not necessarily in connection to that. But this just makes the point that you can't trust the attorney general to prosecute Christie and anybody in that line of command. So Brennan is asking for a special prosecutor, and I think we deserve one. I want to see the witnesses brought forward, and let's hear what they have to say. Leave it up hanging.
Absolutely. We need a special prosecutor to take on Shamu El Jefe Chris Christie, first for being un traditor, a supporter of the Dallas Cowboys, right? The Giants going to get into the playoff, and he would be rooting for the Cowboys to go to the Super Bowl with his pal Jerry Jones. Shanda with his scratzy.
Curtis Sliwa.
He's a man of the people.
Between the Scylla and Charybdis of commentary.
The Drive at 5, 77 WABC.
Be the death of me.
Velvet Underground. Oh, please. They all had those spikes in their arms. Shooting up heroin, right? That was the old days in the Lower East Side. But speaking of drugs and opioids and the use of oxycodone, of which I've had to use with my bouts of colitis and ileitis, I would never have survived the pain, or Percocet from time to time. You got two different groups of physicians. You got those that overprescribe. You know, they pull out their prescription pad and they just write prescriptions. And some of you doctor shop for them. And others who do really good pain management with the help of these, what in some instances are miracle pain-relieving pharmaceutical products. But there is a film out now called Dr. Feelgood, Dealer or Healer, that addresses this issue. And on the line right now is Eve Marson, who is responsible for this project. Thanks for joining us here, Eve, on the Drive Home at 5.
Thanks so much. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so Eve, what was the inspiration for your film, Dr. Feelgood, Dealer or Healer?
Well, I have close friends of mine are doctors. They live in San Francisco, and they were telling me how as young doctors, they were just shocked at how much a part of their practice it was to deal with opioids. So they had patients coming in who were already addicted to opioids, or patients who were seeking opioids all the time, and they were seeing this over-prescription and over-dependence, really, on opioids every day on the job. So they were telling me about this, and we talked a lot about the problems and the growing numbers. But for me, really, it was coming across a story of a doctor where it was not so clear-cut what he was up to. So he got a huge sentence for over-prescribing painkillers, but it wasn't clear to me that he had malicious intentions. And I thought, you know, this could be a new perspective on an issue we hear a lot about in the news, to look at it from the perspective of the doctor. Because doctors are in a tricky spot. As you say, you know, if you want to help people who come to you who are suffering, of course, that any doctor would want to do that, but how can they do that responsibly without creating addiction?
Well, in this case, you tell the story of Dr. William Hurwitz. And from what I saw, in some instances, people put him up on a pedestal. They said, oh, this guy, for the first time in my life, I have no pain. And yet others vilified him.
Exactly. And that was really what drew me to this story, that those testimonies so sharply contradict each other. And of course, you know, where does the truth lie? I think, you know, it's a gray issue and it's a gray story. And that was what I wanted to really explore in this film more than just pointing fingers at addicts or pointing fingers at Big Pharma. I really wanted to look at the different sides, the way these pills can help people but also ruin people.
All right, but what did Dr. William Hurwitz get convicted of? Why is he doing 25 years in jail if some people said without him, their life, they would have lived as a cripple. They would have been in a fetal position. They would have been agonized in pain.
Sure. I mean, that is true, and that's one part of it. On the other, he was prescribing absolutely enormous quantities of the pills for some of these patients, many tens of thousands of pills. And several of his patients not only were became addicted themselves, but actually became very large-scale drug dealers on the Eastern Seaboard as this epidemic was really taking off in the mid to late 90s. So he had to answer to that as well, and he ended up getting arrested on charges of distribution because he was identified as the source going back from those large-scale drug dealings.
Okay, so from your film, Dr. Feelgood, Dealer or Healer, what can we learn from this about what could be an appropriate way of doing pain management so that people get the pharmaceutical products they need without suddenly, you know, ending up standing online outside of a methadone clinic, you know, trading oxy for methadone, et cetera?
Yeah, I think it's a really tricky issue, and I'm not sure there is such a good solution. There have been guidelines that came out this year for the first time, national guidelines, which recommend to doctors that they not prescribe opioids for more than a certain number of days. Which I think is helpful, but we've also seen in certain cases these guidelines can have negative effects on patients who are used to getting their large quantity of drugs and suddenly aren't allowed to get the quantities that they're used to. So it's a tricky situation, especially when we, you know, I think another part of it that we have to consider is how do we provide the proper treatment for those who are addicted, and we're already pretty deep into this addiction issue. So another piece of it, I think, is really educating doctors on how to pass off patients they might be worried about to the proper addiction treatments or facilities.
Well, the flip side of that is once you turn off the conduit, the pipeline, to getting legal pharmaceuticals, as I mentioned, as I've taken Percocet and oxycodone, although I don't exploit it, I don't go over the top like some people do. The alternative we've seen is people then going out into the streets and buying a nickel and dime bag of heroin. That's right, for $5, $10, either sniffing it, injecting it, or smoking it, and then getting stoned to the bone and becoming junkies. Yeah, it is a complicated issue. Trump didn't have the answer during the campaign. Certainly Hillary didn't. And I don't even think the medical authorities have tried to sort this out and figure out how to give pain management to people in desperate need without turning out a whole new generation of junkies.
Curtis Sliwa.
The next mayor of the city of New York.
The Drive at 5.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New Yorker.
77 WABC.
You heard Ken Duffy with his update on German boy, Mr. ISIS on the loose. After killing 12 and injuring so many others in that Christmas shopping plaza near the Berlin Zoo. They knew who he was. He was on their radar screen. He had lied to them. He had burnt down a school. He has pledged himself to ISIS on many, many occasions. And yet, the German authorities were Deutschmark and a euro short in grabbing this guy. But he was on their registry. And earlier today, because I had no idea, as we broadcast here from the NJDiet.com studio, high atop Madison Square Garden, I had no idea that we had a registry. Did any of you? Since 9/11. There's been a program run by Homeland Security requiring the registration and fingerprinting of mostly Arab and Muslim men and immigrants who come to the country or seek to establish themselves in the country. I had no idea that this existed through Bush 43 and Barack Obama. Well, guess what? Guess who discontinued that today? Under the cover of, well, this is one of my final acts other than giving clemency and pardons to people. Barack Obama. And the whole idea of canceling it was to suggest that, oh, you can't trust Donald Trump with this kind of registry. It's the same rationale that your mayor, comrade Bill de Blasio, and the speaker of the feckless, weak, and inefficient City Council of New York, Melissa Mark, Viva Libre Puerto Rico, want to burn and destroy the records of 900,000 people, many of them illegals, who have signed up for that fake, phony, fraudulent, fugazi New York City ID card. Listen to what Kellyanne Conway, who's been appointed consigliere to the new Trump administration, had to say about a Muslim registry.
Well, he's talked about the ban, and he's made it much more circumscribed, even in the course of the campaign. So I would commend everybody to see what he's actually said about it and what's on his website in terms of how to defeat radical Islamic terrorism. What he says there, Chris, is very clear, that we need better vetting policies. There are countries, as you and I speak, that are training, harboring, and indeed exporting terrorists to places like Nice and Brussels, and now Berlin, Germany, and certainly Paris, and the United States of America, in San Bernardino, and of course, a radicalized lone wolf terrorist in Orlando, killing 49 innocent people in May of this year. So people know here and abroad that terrorism is meant to feel like the, quote, new normal, but we don't need to accept that.
So Obama earlier today undercut Trump and killed the Muslim immigrant registration program that, I apologize, I had no idea existed. I don't think many of you thought it existed. And so now, of course, Donald Trump is going to set up a registration program because there was one already in effect since Bush 43.